Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, enjoying another beautiful day in my consciousness. Yes, it's another beautiful day in my consciousness. What about you guys?
This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and it's another beautiful day in my consciousness as well.
And this is Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and it's very definitely another beautiful day in my consciousness as well.
We actually have an online ministry, which is a Unity-approved, events-driven alternative ministry online. It is the Unity Center for Universal Prosperity, and that is Y-O-U, Universal Prosperity. The quick way to get there is ucfyp.com, ucfyp.com. You can also go to yourspiritualpractice.com, which will take you to all our products, and they link back and forth.
Yes, so I want to go into that event thing just a little bit. I've gathered that you have a regular event every Wednesday night and almost every Sunday morning, yes?
That's correct, yeah. Actually, every Sunday morning now we're doing an online event, and almost every Wednesday. We missed one because we had a UMass meeting, but generally we call it a spiritual pop-up because it may pop up at 4 and it may pop up at 5, depending on schedules. And we do other little pop-ups here and there as well. And in fact, for people who receive our Monday musing, and if you don't, you can sign up for it on our website. We are going to put a survey this Monday asking people what kind of events they would like to see and be interested in participating in. So we're expanding that events. Our retreat is coming up, of course, too. And now in October, the three of us are doing a retreat, and that's another event that we are excited about.
Great. I just wanted people to get connected into your regular events, given the current circumstances. And so if they sign up for your Monday Musing, which I read, it's really good. That's where you also announce your weekly events, correct?
We do. At the bottom of our Monday Musing, there's a little yellow section that has our calendar with links for things that are open to everybody. There's a link where you can sign up.
Perfect. That's great.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And so I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you find the absolute word, which you also hear at the end of this program. And you can also see my calendar of where I'm not going, but where I may be appearing. So I'm putting up my Sunday talks that I'm doing, and I'm doing a lot more compared to a year ago. In fact, I was talking during our prep time that I have 4 coming up, which is really unusual for this time of the year. So I'm excited about that. I'm listing them, and as soon as I know what the talk title is, I put it in there. And so you can listen to me in that way. All right, guys, you ready to rock and roll?
We are. We're continuing this week.
Right. So this is part 2 of an article we're digging into, Spinoza and the Oneness of Everything. Spinoza and the Oneness of Everything. And today we're going to continue the topic of immanence and maybe get into substance, but we kind of doubt that because we know how much we can talk.
Although and we do put a lot of substance into everything we say.
That's right. There's a lot of substance in everything we say. That sounds like something Bill would have said.
I know. It must have just migrated over into my head.
Yes. Oh, and the good news is Bill's voice is back. Say something, Bill.
Hey, it is. And I'm so thrilled.
Yeah, and so are we.
We are too.
We were missing your strong voice and your funny sayings. I know you're holding back on your memes and all that because you're saving your voice. That's so funny. Okay, so Spinoza was a man from the 1600s. He was a philosopher, and he was an outlier for his time, much like the three of us are. And he did suffer consequences for that. You can get in more detail from our previous show, which is the first one we did on this. And that's show number 2020-14. And so, Cher, take it away.
Okay, we thought we'd remind people what, according to Spinoza, what immanence and transcendence meant, and then we'll riff on that a little as we move into a little deeper into God, the existence of God, which is kind of a cool topic. So immanence, according to Spinoza, immanence is the idea that the divine is manifested in the material world. That really does mean everything, clouds, insects, plants, people, and the ground beneath our feet. The word transcendent, when used in philosophy, usually means beyond our understanding, and God is often held up as the ultimate example of what is beyond our understanding.
Yeah, and one thing we have to emphasize in this context is that the philosophers at the time were always referring to a God he, a God that's a being. And that is an unquestioned answer yes. that they had. They assumed God was a being, and then all their philosophy rolled off from that and what it meant. So we got to keep that in mind when we're reading Spinoza, because we have that distinct view.
And just as a riff on that, the idea of the immanence goes even deeper. For a lot of people, they interpret that to mean a personal relationship with a
yes.
God. And transcendent is, I believe God is all powerful, but I also have that immanence of that close relationship.
And of course, it's not so much that it's a God with skin on, it's a God essence with skin in the game, so to speak.
Right. Exactly. That's a good billism. And there's a thread of truth in that. Of course, it's kind of like our Get Over It books. So there's a truth kernel in that. And so we don't believe God has skin in the game as we understand it, meaning that God has intentions and stuff like that.
Exactly.
But since principle underlies everything, well, then God does, or principle does, have skin in the game.
And that could actually be a little bridge for people, because we find in our classes and our coaching, the one thing people have the most trouble with is letting go of that personal relationship with God. And so having that little bridge to help them rethink what that means for them can be really useful.
Yeah, and I find giving concrete examples is very, very helpful with that, you know.
And one thing the three of us have moved from, far from, miles from, is that not so much God as a being, but God as beingness.
Yes, beingness. Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, so now where do we go, Cher?
Okay, so now let's move into a little further about the general argument and how Spinoza was an outlier with this.
Okay? Oh, good, yeah.
Yeah, because he didn't go along with the general belief, just kind of like the three of us don't go along. He was a good question on question answers guy.
Right.
So throughout the Middle Ages, many philosophers sought to prove the existence of God. One of those proofs is known as the ontological argument. And that word comes from the Greek ontos, which means real, and logia, study. And it pertains to the study of what is real and what is not real. So essentially, they're looking at, is God real, or proving that God is
real. God is real, yes.
Yeah, that was the big argument at the time. And in a very basic form, the argument works like this. Okay, so I'm going to share what's written in this article.
Oh, yeah.
And then we probably will stop there for just a moment, because just to see where we stand with it. Because this was the general argument of the time. This is not Spinoza. This was the general argument. Works like this. A perfect being must exist. If it doesn't, then it is not perfect. God is perfect and therefore must exist.
Yeah, it's like, that hurts my brain cell.
I know. I said, I wish people could see my face right now.
Yeah.
This pained expression, like, what?
So the unquestioned assumption is there's a perfect being that exists, right? And then if it doesn't, then it's not perfect. What? Why?
Does that
why
mean none of us exist if we're not perfect?
Right. Does perfection mean existence? I don't think so.
Exactly.
It's like, wow, these guys must have been drinking or smoking something.
And probably both.
And probably both, because most of it was legal back then.
And they probably sat around a table and supported each other's weird viewpoints. I can just see it now.
All right, so what does Spinoza say?
So here comes Spinoza, and he pushed the ontological argument further beyond proving the existence of God to actually reflect on God's nature. So Spinoza wondered, If God were infinitely wise, why would he make a decision? In other words, he wouldn't have to make a decision. If he's infinitely wise,
yeah,
there would be a decision to be made.
I don't get that either, but go on.
No, I don't either. But if God was infinite, how could he not be in everything? Surely if God is not in the world, then God has limits. Spinoza reasoned that if God is perfect, God must not have limits. If God is limitless, God must be immanent.
Wow. I think we could do the rest of the program today trying to unpack this. So let's put it in our context the best we can. We don't believe God is wise. We believe God is the principle of wisdom. Which we would use. And I noticed in our prep time share, you're using this regularly now, and I'm still warming up to it, using the word discernment. Mm-hmm. And I actually move from judgment to wisdom to discernment. And discernment is the best word for me.
I love the word discernment because it takes away the judgmental nature of wisdom.
or any conclusion your wisdom might get to. That's what I like.
Right.
Discernment is about a process.
And the God concept, we'll put it that way, that we're talking about may not be the God concept of your understanding. We're talking about the God concept of our understanding, and then there's probably a difference.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And the interesting thing is, I don't get, if God were infinitely wise, why would he make a decision? For us, God is not he, God is beingness. Bill already said that. And it makes no decisions. It simply is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It simply is.
And that's the key, I think, right there. That what you just said sums it up.
Right.
And people want to give that concept physical attributes.
Exactly.
And it to make it more real, I guess, kind of like Mother Nature. I mean, we know there's not a female out there creating hurricanes and rain and sun and leaves, but we call it Mother Nature to give it a name.
Yeah, I wonder if any kids ever wondered if Mother Nature was God's wife or something.
Probably.
You know.
It's, and Jack Frost was their child, I guess.
There you go. And then it goes, if God was infinite, how could he not be in everything? And in unity, the immanence of God is one thing in a sense, and omnipresence is another. And so if God is everywhere, totally present in that sense, well, then God would have to be in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. But,
and people confuse that to say it's all good.
It's all good then, right?
Because if God is in everything, if you're still seeing that as God, the being in everything, that's very hard to justify with what you see.
It's very difficult. Yes.
Go
ahead, Bill.
Which would also bring up the question, if God is in everything, would God also be everything?
Yes. So I think we have a distinct point of view of that, because now we're getting into something we talked about last week, and that's pantheism and panentheism, which I can never remember the definition. So Bill, I'm throwing it back to you.
Okay.
So pantheism is which?
Pantheism is God is the universe and all things in it.
Okay.
And panentheism is that God is everywhere present, but also transcends everything beyond space-time.
Yeah, so I think we said last week we fall someplace in between. Those.
Yeah.
It's kind of like trying to play all your cards, you know.
Well, so here we are.
Have all the bets covered.
we are covering all of our bets here, and that God is everywhere, totally present. Principles everywhere, basically. And principle is not something tangible, right? We can't perceive it with our senses, and it's not measurable, and it's not of time or space. And so, it's everywhere present, but it's not directly involved with everything. Like an atom is, I think I said that last week, you know, so, and that involvement thing gets crazy after a while. So we'll just let that one lie on the floor, okay?
But you know, that's where you go with this kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Once you get outside the box.
Yeah. Well, so principle is involved in everything, But we're not talking about an involvement like the three of us are involved in this program right now.
Right.
Right. Right?
It's not, it doesn't decide things.
Yeah.
It just, it is.
Yes.
And our actions put it into play.
Right. So it doesn't have any agency is another way they talk about that. It doesn't have the ability to take action and make decisions. Right.
Or make or play favorites.
Or I play mean, favorites. Yes.
It just is.
Yeah.
So or, is it principle expressing or is it principle actualizing?
So I'll go for a third. It's somehow us expressing principle. Because when I hear principle expressing, it sounds like principle is doing the expressing.
Exactly. And that's separation.
That's separation. And what was the second one you said?
Actualizing.
So actualizing to me is like expression. Because it puts the activity on the principle.
But we could be actualizing principle.
Yes. In fact, that's what we do. That's exactly. What we do. In fact, a way we could say it, and this is just going to screw things up, but we'll say it anyway, is that we are the ones creating activity from principle. And we're not separate from it. And so since we're not separate from it, then people say, well, then aren't we principle acting? Well, not exactly.
There's a nuance, yeah.
There's a huge nuance there. When you decide to build a table using the idea of table, the table isn't determining anything or doing anything. The idea of table, we're the ones that are the doers and actors.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the equipment is simply a tool. Our tools we use, they don't decide either.
Right. Equipment doesn't decide how I use it. You know,
we could have the same wood and hammers and nails and all that stuff, but your table would look very different than mine.
Yeah. And if all I had was a pair of pliers, I might be using it like a hammer.
That's right.
Right.
That's
it doesn't work so well, but it might get the job done eventually.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these are really interesting metaphors that we need to write down somewhere, guys.
Yes, we do. It'd be a good book sometime. Another book to write.
Yes. So surely if God is not in the world, then God has limits. Well, I think we've kind of pulverized that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to go back to last week's program, 2020-14, we talk more about some of these contrasts. Okay. Yeah. Shall we go on a little bit here?
Sure. Because he moves into substance then after immanence and transcendence, he talks about substance as a topic.
Yeah. So this caught my eye because this is a topic that I'm always having to explain in metaphysics classes because substance to the average human being means physical matter. Mm-hmm. And then substance to Charles Fillmore and to all New Thought people, it meant something different. And this is where I should say also that when we're talking about the substance that is not matter, it's usually the first letter is capitalized. Mm-hmm. And now I capitalize every letter for clarity. Mm-hmm. Okay, right. So Cher, take it away.
Okay, so he starts with an example. When a child is told that God created the universe, the first thing they tend to ask is, but who created God? The problem of an uncaused cause is not solved without eternity. God must be eternal and therefore self-caused.
Yeah, so for God to be eternal doesn't mean it's self-caused. Why did we assume that? It just is.
It's an unquestioned answer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Think about it.
There's another one. And for
I can't help it. This reminds me of that story of the little girl who was drawing a picture and the teacher said, "What are you drawing?" And she said, "I'm drawing a picture of God." And she said, "But nobody knows what God looks like." And she said, "Well, they will when I'm done."
That is brilliant, right? I just
love that story.
from the mouth of children. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we need that image.
And we hold another distinct view from this. The assumption in the author's writing here, and this is not Spinoza, this is the author. The assumption here is God created the universe. And we are moving in the direction that consciousness and physicality have always existed. Mm-hmm. And if there's always existence, then there is no cause. It just is.
And that is really hard for the for our brain sometimes to comprehend.
Right.
In our, because of the nature of time that we have, linear time that we live in, that's almost, that's one of those things you just, it's, I really plays with my head.
It plays with mine too, and students, and I think I'm pretty good with it now. And if there isn't a cause, then they can't be a victim.
Right.
Right? They can't be a victim. And of course, we live in a world of victim consciousness.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll do this one little piece here, Cher, and then we'll do the, why don't you read it? Some of Spinoza.
What Spinoza wrote.
Yeah, and so that'll be a tease for next week.
Right. This will lead into his belief, because again, he questioned everything. God, or a substance consisting of infinite attributes, each of which expresses eternal and infinite essence, necessarily exists. If God didn't exist, then God's essence would not involve existence. And that is absurd. Therefore, God necessarily exists.
Wow. This really guy was good at circular arguments, wasn't he?
Leave people thinking about that one.
Yeah, so so that's our tease. I don't know, that might encourage you to not listen. And of course, that one would be 2020-16. This is actually program 2020-15. And we're going to move now to the absolute word. And guys, I skipped Mother's Day, which is what we would normally do for this particular show. I went on to the next one. And so the absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, has been used with permission. And this comes from May 17th, 2020. And I made the words use principle. And the reason is, this was another one that the Daily Word had let go, let God. I'm done with let go, let God, and trying to redo it. So I just say use principle. I consciously use principle. Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore said, by the term mind, we mean God, the universal principle which contains all principles. And that comes from the revealing word. When faced with a decision, do I only rely on my senses, repetitive thinking and feeling, or do I remember to consciously use God, use principles? Principles are my foundation. I use them to express my personality, my body, and everything else I create. Principles are as near as my next thought, because whether conscious of it or not, every thought I create is based on principle. I release my seeming dependence on my senses, repetitive thinking, and feeling. I center my mind and heart on the constant presence of principle, including love, understanding, will, wisdom, and strength. I find answers to questions. New possibilities for good emerge. I move forward with confidence. I consciously use principle. And so it is. Woohoo. And this is not the one that ends in AL, right? Principle of the school.
Not a pal.
No,
that fits in so nicely with everything we just talked about.
I think it did. And so it is. And thank you to our listeners. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Cher. I'm signing off for now. This is Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ciao.